Hello, everyone, and welcome to Hit and Hustle from irishsportsdaily.com. I am your host, Greg Flamont, and that is the professor of JMU University, Mr. Jamie Uyama. It is Tuesday, March 12th, and Jamie and I finally get to talk about spring practice that started last week. The lads are on spring break right now, but we haven't talked about it. Jamie had something come up last week. I was on with Christian, so Christian and I broke down the open practice that he was able to attend. We talked about that. Haven't talked to Jamie about that, so I want to get into it with him today, talking about the offense and what we think can actually come of this, right? Like, I think that we always have big dreams about what the offense is going to be. And it never really comes to fruition, or at least it hasn't in recent history. So we're going to talk about the offense and kind of all the new pieces there. And then we'll get into some news and notes around college football. And I'm going to start off with Nick Saban complaining again about the state of the sport. And then the playoff committee trying to ruin basically what is a good you know, it's a good situation right now, and they're already trying to move past it. And I've got a little bit of a hot take for you on that, and they got to be a little bit careful. So that's what we're going to talk about today. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you haven't done so already, please subscribe to this channel. Please like this video, and please hit the notification bell so whenever it is we are going live. Links to this podcast are in the description below. Jamie, and I don't know if you caught it, Dara Mabry and I released a couple of live reaction
Right after the games.
Yep, Dimes with Dara shows celebrating the ladies and their ACC tournament championship win. A lot of close games, especially in the tournament final. And so, when you're in a close game and you're sweating it out, what you want to do is you want to be wearing your bamboo shirt, which you can go and purchase at esqclothing.com, which is founded by Gao Wang. Your bamboo shirt is going to be 3 degrees cooler than regular cotton. So I'm watching the game. I'm feeling fresh, nervous, but still feeling fresh because I'm 3 degrees cooler than everybody else who's wearing their cotton shirt. And you can go to ESQ. You've seen ESQ on all your favorite Notre Dame players and coaches with over a decade of making the best custom clothing available. ESQ will help you look and feel your best in 2024 from a perfect fitting suit or sport coat, shirt or bomber jacket, or that perfect tuxedo for wedding season. Check out Gaz's amazing work at esqclothing.com and book an appointment to upgrade your wardrobe today. Mention ISD and get 10% off your entire purchase. So thank you to ESQ for sponsoring this show. Let's get to the chat. Matthew Patterson is here. Thank you for being here. Rajon is here as always. Rajon, thank you always for being a part of this show. CFB Hurts. Haven't seen you in a little bit, CFB. Our OC had the number one offense and Heisman Trophy winner last year. Obviously, he's going to replicate that in South Bend for 2024. You can't say it's off the table, Jamie. I think it's possible to get Riley Leonard into the Heisman Trophy conversation in 2024. I think I had did I have a hot take Thursday or Tuesday on this?
It wasn't that he was going to be a Heisman, but it was – I can't remember what it was, but it was
– he's going to rush for like 1,000 yards, I think it was.
Yes, that's what it was, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, if he does that, he's probably going to be a Heisman contender, I would say. Like, good chance he's a finalist. He rushed for 1,000 yards.
Yeah, I think it's in play. Rajon said, I went to the Georgia site and they were talking about the elimination of spring practice. Something to think about, they said, due to the longer season for some teams. What do you think about that, Jamie?
I don't think that's ever going to happen. I guess Georgia, maybe they can think about it because they're going to probably go deeper than some teams. But what about these teams that like aren't making the playoff and only playing 12 games, like, or whatever, right? Like, what are they? I mean, they're just going to not have those practices. And then let's just say, like, the playoff becomes everything, and then they – I don't know what's going to happen to the bowl games, really. Like, have they really talked about, like, what's going to happen to all these other, like, side bowl games?
No.
Because things keep expanding, right? Like, so – I mean, so imagine they get rid of some of these bowl games. Well, those are like 15 practices you just lose. from that. So if they get rid of that, plus get rid of spring, that's a lot. That's 30 practices. Like, they're not doing that. It's not happening. Maybe they lessen a bit. Maybe they take away some, padded opportunities. I could see that. I could see that happening in the spring. But I don't see them. Maybe they do other stuff within the season and say, like, hey, you can't, the NFL has certain rules in terms of, like, practice stuff that you can do in the off season. And I think season two, in terms of, like, what you can and can't do, maybe they make more rules, stricter rules for that to kind of lessen the load. But I just don't see them, like, that's one of the big advantages of college football is that you get those extra practice opportunities. Mm-hmm. I don't see that happening.
You could do it essentially on your own. That doesn't need to be a rule.
Yeah. You don't have to. Yeah.
Like just if Georgia or whoever wants to, not hit in the spring, then don't, right? Like, there's no rule that says you have to conduct your practices this kind of way. Just do however you want, right? Like, have two padded practices, have no padded practices, right? Like, have your spring game be 7-on-7, right? Whatever you want. Like, it doesn't matter. I think that the individual programs can do it however they want, but like, coaches want to work with their team. You got to be doing something. You're just not going to do anything, right? Like, you always want to be working at it. And here's the other part. If guys are getting paid now, you bet your butt we're going to have practice. We're going to have a lot of practice. Like, to me, it's like, look, if this is kind of like the offshoot of like all the conversations around like employees and, players. I mean, obviously if they're going to unionize, then this sort of thing will be collectively bargained. But if you're doing the employee thing and you're getting paid lots and lots of money, you should, you're an employee, you're going to have to come to work. You're going to have to come to practice. Right. So that's kind of a something that's going to come down the pike, right? Like an unintended consequence of kind of all these conversations. Someone who's tired of having these conversations is Nick Saban. He's been spouting off about his unhappiness with the current situation, talking today about how, his wife, Miss Terry, was commenting on, like, why are we doing this? All the players care about is getting paid and how much money they're going to get paid. And, it's no longer about the game or whatever it may be. You had a good tweet about this. Tell everyone about your tweet, and then I'll go into my thoughts on it.
Yeah, it's just so hypocritical of him to go on and spout off about this, about how all they care about is money, when the players who are choosing Alabama are choosing Alabama because of the future earnings they're going to get. Not to mention that they're getting bags. Like, these guys are getting something. Maybe they weren't getting as much as Ole Miss guys or Texas A&M guys or whatever, but like, they were getting some incentive. Like, that was something that was happening. That's been happening at Alabama for decades, way before NIL or any of this stuff. So like, relax with that kind of stuff with Saban and him saying that kind of thing there.
Who was the player who had bricks of cash in his car? Wasn't that a Bama player? Like a lineman? Remember that happened? There's a guy with bricks of, it was like $10,000. He had bricks of it. It was a photo. I think it was probably a Bama player,
but like, it's the kind of thing, like, I mean, I've heard like a million stories about like guys who did or didn't choose Bama, and they had like, hey, why don't you just go check out this room? And you're like, here's this. It was very like the program. Here's this envelope full of cash. Like, there's a lot of that stuff. Like, so don't give me that crap about them. Just like, this is like, it's all about money now. Like, it wasn't before. Or the fact that, like, I'm sorry that it became harder for him to manage all this stuff. And it is harder for everyone, but this guy had it all before. He was cutting guys left and right before, like, you know, he didn't invent it, but he came close. You know, like he was as cutthroat as anybody doing it, right? Like, so he's cutting guys instead of letting them stay to get their degree because it goes against their thing. And then there's always constantly replacing people, and you know, they're using the fact that they have all these guys as first round draft picks, you know, that to, in order to say like, oh, you come here, you get developed, whatever. People, yes, you're coming here to get developed, but they're not thinking about development. They're thinking about the cash. Mm-hmm. They're thinking about, I'm going to do this. I'm going to take care of my family. I'm going to like take care of myself for the rest of my life.
They put out the first round picks and how much money they are all making in a year. Right.
Like, yeah.
That's part of it.
And here's the other thing that I've always wanted to know. Does Nick Saban call his wife Miss Terry to her face? No, he calls her and he's like, Miss Terry, I'm home. Like, does that happen? Like, or is it just like his, you know, cute name that he uses for her in the press conferences? He just calls her like, hey, Miss Terry. Like, he walks in the door, Miss Terry. Like, is it like a third person type deal where she's like, Miss Terry, I'm here. Like, what's going on with that? I know it's maybe like a Southern thing, but he's from West Virginia. So I don't know if that's like a different kind of thing. And this is like a West Virginia thing because his wife's from West Virginia too. Mm-hmm. Always wondered about this. Like, what is going on? Does he call her Terry to her face? Like, does he just call her Terry? Does he just like, but he always just refer to her as Miss Terry because that's like just, you know, maybe his like sign of affection for her in public. I want to know. I need to know more on this because we've heard about Miss Terry for forever. And I need to know, does he call like, you know, Saban's, you know, kids? Let's hear. Does he call her Miss Terry in person? I want to know.
I'm pro Miss Terry. Just the name. Just for
sure. Oh, me too.
It truly is. And staying on the topic of like college football and where it is, things of that nature. I'm tired of the coaches whining about how hard it is and like it's different now. Be quiet. Like just stop. Like it's an 8-figure job for some of you. Okay. 7-figure job. Yeah. I'm sorry that you have to, that there are aspects of it that are different now, but the other part too is like, yes, it's different. And yes, it's, you know, you have to worry about your own roster and you have to do all these other things. First of all, you have staff for that. Okay. The coaches delegate these things, right? It's not like the all of this falls on Nick Saban or Jeff Hafley or Chip Kelly or whoever. It doesn't just fall on you. You have staff that handles this stuff, right? The position coaches. If anyone should be complaining, it's position coaches because they get paid less and they have to deal with all that stuff. They're the first person. The last person to find out about is the head coach. So there's the first part of it. The second part of it is like, yeah, that's tough and everything, but I'll bet Nick Saban really enjoyed having Jahmyr Gibbs on his team. I bet you he really enjoyed having Jameson Williams on his team, you know, and the kid Burton from Georgia. Like, I'm sure he really enjoyed that. So it's like, yeah, you don't like it, but you enjoy the fruits of it, you know. Yeah. But so just stop complaining. Just stop. Okay. It's harder. I get it. Fine. Stop complaining about everything. Okay.
Yeah. Like, well, like you complain about the RPOs, and then all of a sudden they just were like, well, just we're going straight RPOs all the time. Like,
you can't have a player who is a player goes to the press. If a player or a group of players went to the press and just were whining about the state of college football all the time, they would be dismissed, laughed out of the thing. Like, just deal with it, right? You're getting paid now. Well, the coach has been getting paid all the time. So that's what the money's for. That this is what the money is for. Earn the money. And again, speaking of money, the playoff committee, the SEC, the Big Ten, they want more money. And so they are now trying again to make it easier for these big conferences to get automatic bids into the playoffs. They want, you know, all these secured spots and all these other things. And then they come out and say, well, it all depends on the TV deal and what kind of TV deal you can have. And here's the problem that college football needs to be careful about. Okay. The NBA is kind of going through this too. The NFL hasn't as much because it doesn't come up as much in the NFL. But the NBA is going through this a little bit too when players are – there's the opt-out thing, right? Or not opt-out, but the load management. When players are kind of not really they're sitting out games all the time now. The All-Star game's a joke, right? The regular season's a joke. And it's just like people are just not interested anymore. Right. Women's basketball, women's college basketball is outdrawing NBA games in primetime. Okay. That's what's happening with the NBA right now, which is a good thing for women's college basketball, but it's not a good thing for NBA basketball. And I think college football, all the conversations that are going on with it, and this is part of the players too. They need to be aware of this. All of the conversations that we are having in the offseason are about playoffs and money for players. And money for conferences and super conferences. And when people start to hear only about this stuff, they start to get disillusioned a little bit. Now, I'm not saying, like, obviously the ratings are the ratings, right? I do think they need to be careful. Because we've seen it in golf. Like, I'm someone who follows golf a lot. All these guys talk about is money. In the live stuff, it's all about money and secured money and guaranteed money. It's like, hey man, like I'm kind of tired of hearing you guys talk about this. I am. Like I want to see good sports. And if it's all about just the playoffs, you do run the risk of these regular season games just kind of like, why do I need to watch? Why do I need to care? If three lost teams are getting into the playoffs, you're like, why do I need to care about this? So, well, what's your thought on that?
I mean, well, first of all, in terms of the money stuff, I mean, it is something that does turn people off. Like that is just a fact, right? Like if that's what it becomes all about, like even though it's been all about that, but the fact that it's like taking over the narrative of everything, that's not good, right? Like I think that's another reason too why. I mean, there's a lot of reasons why baseball is going down too, but like when you think about like baseball and there's guys making like 30, 40 million a year and they're like, people don't, this game's not even popular now or comparatively to other things. And then and still these guys make that money. It's just like, it does become, you know, ridiculous for a lot of people to kind of look at it from that perspective. I think it's just This is why all this stuff was inevitable, which is why it's just like stupid. I always just thought the whole Big 12 trying to be like, I guess it's good. Like, what are you going to do? You're going to try to survive. Okay. They're trying to survive. So they're adding all of these teams, right? But they added all of these teams that don't bring them more equity into the thing. All it does is just help diminish the Pac-12 and take that away from what was left over the Pac-12. And then the ACC, obviously, like, adding Stanford and SMU and Cal, like it adds no equity to them too. So, but with the Big Ten and SEC, all of their additions, recent additions at least, right? Because some of the previous ones maybe not, but like all the recent additions like have added value to them in terms of like TV contracts, which is that's where they get the most money from. So they do have all the bargaining power they do. And that's why, like, and really too, because ESPN is involved in it, they can say like, well, yeah, we want more Big Ten teams or we want more SEC teams in there because they're going to rate better. Right. Mm-hmm. And they have the kind of numbers to prove it. I guess you could point to, the Big 12 or, and all these other, ACC and all these other smaller conferences could point to like, NCAA tournament games, or maybe they could look at that and say like, oh, look at this rating or whatever. But I think for the most part, it's just proven fact. If like Ohio State is playing Alabama in like the quarterfinals, that's going to rate way better than Ohio State playing Texas Tech or whatever. Mm-hmm. Right. Like, and that's just kind of how it is. So they just hold all the cards. And that's why too, like, I guess like Notre Dame wants to be like keep their independence, but it's obvious they're not going to be able to keep it because if they get pushed out financially enough to the point that it's they're not going to earn enough for, you know, with their share of it, then they're going to have to, because it's just like you don't want to get cut off and have that big of a gap between them and like the Big Ten and the SEC. At the same time, it really, like, because Notre Dame's kind of on its own, they're really the only other entity that has bargaining power, because right. Notre Dame rates, right? So, yeah. So if like, which is why they did the thing with like, well, if it's 14 and Notre Dame is 14, they're in, right? Rather than like, they're not going to get bumped out by like a, you know, an extra Big Ten team or an extra SEC team. They're just going to get in because they have to get in because it's like they're worth more. And that's really what it comes down to. But it's just, should it be that way? No, it should be like the best teams. But it's like, how do you even judge the best teams now when, like, say the Big 12, they don't have a team that's like, I mean, you know, SP Plus isn't gospel or anything like that, but like, there's not a Big 12 team that's in the top 10. There's like three teams that are on the fringe of the top 20. Mm-hmm. That's it. And like, you know, what if you only, if you're on your schedule, you only play one of those teams. If you're a Big 12 team, you don't play one other of those teams. That's a big difference between if you're like in the Big 10, you play maybe like three top 15 teams or more, right? Or you play like a bunch more teams that are in the top 30, right? Like how you know, I talked about how USC's playing like, I think like eight straight games of top 35 teams, which is just like, that's a gauntlet. That's kind of like an NFL schedule, right? That's like playing that kind of schedule, which makes the NFL tough every week, is that like, man, you could lose any game, even to some of the bad, you know, quote unquote bad teams, right? Yeah. And that really can't happen in a lot of, you know, college football instances. There's not teams that are like 80th, the 80th best team that is going to beat the top, you know, the eighth best team. Like there'd be, have to be like seven different things to happen to make that upset happen. So it's just the way it's split up now, I don't even know any other way that they would be able to do it. So I think it's just inevitable that it's just going to break off anyway. So it's just like, yeah. I just kind of think like, get it over with. And it totally sucks. Like, I don't want to see like, so like a program like Utah, I don't want to see Utah be on the outside of it all when they've like, for years, like, you know, going all the way back to when they were in the WAC in the Mountain West and then building it up to get in the Pac-12, like, they've been a very good program for years. Yeah. Like, you know, like I don't know how many years where you could say like they're at least like a top 25 program, and have won, like they've won the Pac-12 multiple times, right? They've been to Rose Bowls. Like that should count for something. I don't know if it will count for something, because if they don't want to include Utah, they don't have to, right? Yeah. And that's the main thing. It's like, even with like, say, Colorado, well, Colorado is worth something now because Deion Sanders there, and then they might be a one-year wonder in terms of ratings, but like if Deion Sanders leaves, or if they flame out, which, you know, they could go 4-8 again this year. If that happens, like, what is Colorado worth? Why would you even want to include Colorado in there? Right. So there's all these different things in it. It's just going to end badly for all this stuff, but it's like, you almost just want it to end sooner than later, because it's just like a slow death for some of these other programs. And I mean, really what should happen is like some of these other programs that have been for years and years in the Big Ten and SEC and haven't really been able to contend, they shouldn't be in it, but they'll probably will just by association.
Yeah. I think Notre Dame they need to consider from a schedule equity standpoint as well. And not just from a, how do we qualify for the playoffs type? Because like at some point you can't just put out bad schedules. Like you got to be able to schedule teams and put together a schedule that the fans are going to be excited about and actually test your team as well. I think that's something they need to consider too when deciding, like, do we need to join a conference, whether it's Big Ten or SEC. They need to consider like, what kind of schedule can we put on a year basis? Because it's going to get to the point where being undefeated isn't going to be something that needs to happen, right? So it, especially if you're in a conference. So they need to consider that stuff. So anyway, that's some of the things that I wanted to talk to you about. And so let's transition over to the Notre Dame football team, Jamie. I didn't get to talk to you about, the spring practice that was live. I'm curious as to speaking about Notre Dame offensively, when taking in the reports and talking to Matt, talking to Christian, and reading about it, I'm curious what stuck out to you, and then we'll just kind of go from there.
I think it's obvious the receivers stuck out. I think that stuck out for everybody, right? Like, yeah, them just having that kind of day where, I mean, it's really been a long time since the receivers had that kind of day against Notre Dame's corners. The last couple of years, especially last year, like, they got dominated. They got dominated. Like, it was not even close, right? Like, it was the kind of thing where, like, someone made one play. It was like, it was a big deal because they weren't making any, right? Yeah. And I just think that just to have that, and I know, like, you know, there's the caveat that Christian Gray kind of, you know, he tweaked something, so they kept him out. And then Cam Hart's not there, so it is different at corner now. This year. And it's not like, you know, there were no reports of people like cooking Ben Morrison, right?
Right.
So, you know, that has to be added context to it. But just the fact that they're out there making plays, like, that's just something that, well, you know, wasn't happening. So, yes, it's the first day. Yes, it's no pads, all that kind of stuff. That stuff does, you know, it is. Like, don't get overhyped with it. But they're faster. We knew that they were going to be better anyways. We knew that the added talent from the transfers, like, you know, Chris Mitchell and Jaden Harrison, like, they were going to be faster because of that, right? And then obviously they got Bo Collins coming in the summer. And then, you know, you got the freshman on there too, Micah Gilbert, who had a big day on his first day, and Cam Williams, who showed out too in terms of, like, his speed. Like, we knew they were going to be better. And then the other guys who were returning were going to be better too. But that's not a surprise, but you just want to have days like that, because if they can't do that in practice, it's not going to happen on against good teams, right. Because, yeah, you can cook Central Michigan, but that's not what you're trying to do, right? Like, you're trying to do it, you know, the games they lose. It's like, just imagine if they could have basically the difference in the game, in the Ohio State game, you could just say it's Travion Henderson broke like a 60-yard one to the house. And he just made that one play. He made that one play, and that one play was the difference in the game. And Notre Dame didn't get that one just big explosive play that kind of broke open the game for them. And, you know, without that, you know, it's hard to score points against defenses like Ohio State.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting to me, like, Cam Williams, right? Like, so they did, like, one of these things. It's like a bit that they do now. He went to all the position groups and asked, like, who would run the fastest 40. And first of all, he didn't name himself, which is like, name yourself, dude. Like, if you know, like, I want you to say you're the fastest one. But he said Jaden Harrison, which is interesting to me. Like, he's a quick guy. I would not have said, like, oh, he is the fastest one in that room. But that's interesting to me that they view him as kind of the fastest guy, on, or at least Cam Williams does. And I don't see him as, like, a speed guy like that. I was just like a jittery slot guy. I feel like he is like an undersold weapon for Notre Dame this year. I feel like there's something there. There's been a good amount of buzz about him too, which is interesting to me. With regard to Micah Gilbert and Chris Mitchell as well, he had a clip online that where he made a catch over, I think it was Jaden Mickey. He made a catch over him. The thing about it is, like, you can only make the plays against the people that are out there for the plays to be made against, right?
Yeah.
It's either it happened or it didn't. And the fact that it happened is like, that's all it is, right? And we were debating this on the ISD chat as well. Like, it's just like, well, what does it mean? Well, it means that in that practice, he made plays against those people. and you go from there, right? And I think you guys made a good point on Power Hour, and I think it was Mike who made this point. Like, it needs to be all the time, and it needs to be consistent. And once you start hearing that, then you start to think, well, okay, can this guy compete? The other part of this too is Jordan Faison isn't there, and listening to Power Hour, Mike was not happy about that. To me, I think it's like a not a big deal at all, like none percent.
I'm with you there. Go ahead.
The other part too is like playing lacrosse. He's doing stuff that will be beneficial to him as a football player. He's not working on his football ability per se, but he's working on football skills as a lacrosse player, making people miss, moving around in the open field. Like that's what you want from him. In my opinion, like spring practice is important, but it also isn't, you know, like there are so many guys who just don't participate in spring. Eli Raritan, like what's going on with him? Like maybe he doesn't have like a ton of reps in the spring. Does that mean that anyone is concerned about how he's going to perform in the fall? Not really. Like, I don't care. Like to me, it doesn't matter if Eli Raritan doesn't. It
matters he's healthy in the fall. Yeah.
Exactly. And so that's how I feel about Jordan Faison. It's like he could have some ankle problem that got cleaned up. And it's like, well, he can't be there for the spring, but he'll be there for the fall. Right. So that's how I feel about Faison. Not worried about that at all. Another thing I wanted to talk about is Robert Halicki. Wagner looked bigger than low 280s, but what's the number? 290, 295. O-line is different than other positions, but with this money everywhere, is he patient enough to wait 3 or 4 years for playing time? That was another thing that I think everyone kind of jumped on, is that he went from 288 last year to 281 listed on spring chart or the spring, you know, when they released the new heights and weights and things like that. And you noted in photos, he didn't look 281, right? He looks quite bigger, right? Thicker. He looks thicker in the neck, especially. He looks thicker to me. You know, maybe they weighed him at a certain time when he had just gotten sick or whatever. I don't know. It could be anything, but the way you see him, it looks like he looks bigger to us. I feel like the Tosh Baker thing and him especially, like it seems the way Marcus is talking, they expect Tosh Baker to win the job. I don't really know how to feel about that. Do you feel any kind of way about like that position and how the offensive line is shaking up?
Well, I mean, one thing we could say about Marcus Freeman in these press conferences is
he's
very all over the map in terms of like
he not says a truth stuff.
I don't think he's not telling stuff. He only tells you what he wants to say in the moment, and I don't even think he's doing it for a narrative. He's just saying it in the moment and
answering a question.
And a lot of times I don't think he's thinking about like, or to me, I can tell the difference between when he's like, oh, like there's just something that's so obvious where it's like, of course, like Joe Alt is Joe Alt or whatever, you know, like, comparatively when he's talking about like here's some kind of open competition, because there's a lot of times too where like he'll talk about the competition and not name somebody that isn't there, and people like overreact, like, why didn't he name this person? Well, it doesn't really matter because he just didn't name that person, but it did. That person doesn't mean they're out of the mix, right? It's just like he's just talking about in the moment, so it's not like people overreact to a lot of the press conference stuff, and it's just like I think we just know from like 2 years in, don't take it too seriously. Don't take everything that he said as like gospel of like, this is what's going to happen. And I don't even think it's like lying or whatever. It's just like sometimes it's just like, he's just saying within the moment, like, this is just, you know, you're asking him and he's like, well, I'm also thinking about this in my head. I'm also thinking about that. Like, so he's not, you know, doesn't have the whole picture going on. So I don't know what it means. I really don't know if how they feel about Tosh Baker. I don't know. Maybe it is like a something that is motivational for Wagner or whatever. Maybe it could be another thing, right? Like, I couldn't really say, you know, what it means. I will say that with if Wagner, if he is 281, if he's like low 280s, that's obviously not a good thing. And I think everybody knows that. You just don't have offensive tackles in college football playing in that kind of 280 range. Although I think like I did mention this on Power Hour too, that like I'm pretty sure Robert Hainsey was around that in that first year. Like he was not very big. I'm positive he was under 290, but obviously freshman Robert Hainsey is different than a third year Emil Wagner, right? So also, where's he going to be in the fall? That's what matters. Mm-hmm. And also, I don't even think the main thing with him, it's not like he's like, man, this guy, he can't move people in the run game. He can't do this. He can't do that. It's like, you want him to be a certain size because he's big enough, but you just want him to play well enough to earn that spot. Like, if it's one thing where it's like, man, he can't anchor at all, he just doesn't got enough, you know, he just doesn't got enough weight there to anchor against speed to power, then that is a different topic. And maybe that is something. But if he's like just getting beat around the corner, or he's like he can't reach block somebody, or he can't whatever, you know, not doing his assignments well, that's a totally different story. Because if you look at like Billy Shrouth, physically would have the most impressive plays out of anyone at the guard position last year. But there's a reason why he didn't win the job and wasn't a starter until Rocco got hurt, right? And I mean, he played well at the end of the year. Like, you know, I want to give him credit for that. But, you know, there's other things that go into it, right? Like he's a guy who was a big guy and had trouble anchoring, you know, in pass pro. I don't know like how assignment sound he was with everything. Like, because that was another thing with like with Rocco Spindler.
He wasn't in the game.
Yeah.
So you kind of know, like, that's the problem. He's not assignment sound all the time because he's not in the game. If he was, because you say he's the most impressive player in terms of just like the way that like his good plays look like they're the best on the offensive line, but he's not playing. So obviously he doesn't know what he's supposed to be doing, you know?
Yeah. And I think this happens all the time too, where, there are guys who like Jonathan Jones, I'm just picking somebody randomly, and this is nothing against Jonathan Jones as a player or anything. I'm just stating a fact. Like, people would always mention when it was like garbage time, Jonathan Jones was always like flying around, making plays, whatever, in garbage time. People like, man, why isn't Jonathan Jones playing or whatever? And it's like, well, probably because there's other things he doesn't do well. And it's easy to look good flying around doing this. And obviously he's smaller. And there's all these other pieces of it that you just realize and you're like, well, there's a reason why he never became a starter at Notre Dame, right? So I think it's just one of these things that you'll never get a full, honest answer from the coach staff. No, I'm surprised no one asked about Wagner, actually, at the press conference. That's what I'll say. I was a bit surprised at that. But we are going to get the offensive line, hopefully. Wagner will be there.
Yeah.
I mean, we are going to get, in terms of interviews, we are going to get Joe Rudolph, you know, during spring ball too. And we'll find a lot more about it because to me, offensive line, that's like the most questions. Like, I mean, Joe Rudolph might have the most interesting interview, like, you know, the scrum out of any assistant coach because there's so many questions there that people want to know about all of these guys, right? And Joe Otting, as mentioned here, right? Like, I'm really intrigued by Joe Otting. Him being 297 already, like, that is, I mean, that's the flip side of it. You're looking at that and you're like, man, that's really encouraging if he kept the athleticism of all that, because he's one of the best athletes that they've signed, and I'm definitely the best interior lineman athlete that they've signed in a long, long time. I think he has a chance to be like a great player for Notre Dame. So, I mean, I don't know, maybe his time is now. And then he's someone that like, this guy's got to play. Maybe he can play guard. Maybe he can play center and you're going to shift Craig, or maybe he's going to beat out Craig. Like, I don't know. I want to know all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So Vamos Irish bringing up the Joe Otting piece. Robert Halicki mentions solid center and long snapper in high school. 5'7", 170. Moving people, Jamie. Moving people. Making it happen, Robert, out here. Good job by you, Robert. You got to do what you got to do, you know, especially at the high school situation. And you got to do what you got to do in order to improve yourself, improve your website, improve your social media page. You got to do what you got to do, and you got to get the right people in place to do that. And if you want to do that, then you got to go to vsrmediacompany.com, which is founded by Notre Dame football pregame host and Emmy Award-winning anchor Vahid Saadrizadeh. VSR Media provides professional and cinematic video and photo. Whether you're looking for a collegiate or pro-level highlight reel, have a personal story to tell, or are aiming to diversify and grow your business, VSR Media provides professional and short and long-form video storytelling, social media management, and website design. VSR Media also captures professional headshots, senior and sports photos. Contact them at vsrmediacompany.com. Mention Irish Sports Daily to receive 20% off your first project. Visit them online or give them a call at 574-800-9106. I was pretty shocked at the discussion around CJ Carr. I did not expect to hear in after the first practice that he was like a star or whatever, like impressive, especially in the arm strength category. Like when I've seen him, there are things that I've been impressed by. I've been impressed by his poise. I've been impressed by his ball placement. I've been impressed by his toughness, right? I've been impressed by his decision-making. I've never been like, you know what? This guy's got a gun. Like he's got a strong arm, you know, and he can sling it. Never thought that. And coming out of the practice, Christian's like, you know who can throw it? Is CJ Carr. Yeah. Especially as compared to like all these other guys, right? What do you make of that? What do you make of that just off the top?
You know what? I'm actually not that surprised by it. You know, I saw CJ Carr. I don't know. Christian was at the same camp, so it's not like we weren't there. But we were both at Irish Invasion, you know, so – basically like that week that Carr committed to Notre Dame. And, you know, he worked out at quarterback that day. And then, gosh, the name escapes me right now. The guy who signed with Georgia, the quarterback that stayed in their class, I know who you're talking about. From Massachusetts, who he has a big arm. And he was there. And
is it Vandegrift or something?
No, he's another guy who's
Brock Glenn.
No,
I got I'll stop guessing. It's bad. Bad guessing. I'll
stop guessing. anyways, that guy, he was there, and the effort that he put into, like, he was obviously trying to impress, right? Like, he was, really like just slinging it and like really like putting everything. He can't. Ryan Puglisi. That's
okay. Rajon got it.
Yeah. So he was really, you know, you could see he had a good arm, and he could really throw it. But he was putting all effort to try to impress, to still like, this is my arm. And CJ Carr threw as hard as him. You know, it had as much zip on the ball as him, with very little effort. So I was like, I just seeing him in person, I was like, I don't get these arm strength things. Cause like, he's just a guy who throws with touch, you know, but I just saw him and I was like, the ball comes in there, like it zips. And if it also made me think, I'm like, if he really wants to put it in there, he could do it. That's not how he throws it. That's not how he's throwing it. He doesn't have to try to like put in the effort to get it there. And like, I'm not saying he has like, I mean, I've seen Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields throw in person, and those guys in high school, like, I mean, they had different level arms, right? Like, I'm not saying that Carr was on that level, but he definitely didn't have an arm that I was like concerned about his arm in person. Like, I thought like, this guy won't be able to, like, where it's going to come to a point if he's, you know, looked as an NFL prospect where people are going to be like, man, I don't think he's got the arm for it. Like, I'm like, no, I think he could probably make every throw that you want him to make. But I mean, I guess from that perspective, I wasn't really surprised, but I mean, I think it's a great thing if he's going out there and people are impressed with him on the first day. And I think the main thing with that, and I would say even Micah Gilbert too, and it's something that you kind of mentioned when we were just in our like IC group chat, just like, you know, you shouldn't overreact to Micah Gilbert having a great day or people kind of naming him as a standout because he's, you know, he's beaten guys who are third team guys. But I mean, that's how you get to go against the second team. And that's how you go get up to the first team. That's the start. And the first impression, it does matter in this kind of thing, because if a guy comes in and he's doing that right away and building that kind of confidence right away, chances are he's going to be a pretty darn good player for Notre Dame. And people should slow their roll if they're expecting like him to be a star right away just because he had one good practice on the first day of practice out pads. But to say that he might not play, you know, he might play this year, might help them this year, to say that he might actually be like a stud down the line, like that is something that I think, you know, that has increased because of that first impression. And like, I would say that every player since I've been going to like fall camp and spring ball for ISD, so it was like in 2015, like every single one of those guys that I've seen that was like a freshman that really kind of stood out in some way in that first day, every single one of those guys ended up being a good player. Like none of those guys ended up being like a total, like a bust, none of them. So I'd say, like, you know, and I wasn't there obviously, but you know, everybody else is, like, I think that's, you know, a pretty good sign. That's a pretty good sign.
TJ Carr will win the Heisman in 2026 and 2027.
That didn't even come close. That didn't even come close, because I wasn't even talking about Carr there. You got to change it up to Micah Gilbert will win the Biletnikoff. Like, that's what you need to do.
Yeah. See, Bjorn says we all heard it. Look, Jordan Faison. Right, last year during fall, it's like, you know, it's like, what's, you know, who looks good? This lacrosse kid, he looks amazing. And it's like, you know, it's just lacrosse guy, it's against walk-ons or it's whatever. It's like, okay, it's just one-on-ones. It's like, okay, fine, yeah, okay. And then put him in the game and he's burning like Louisville.
Yeah, in saying people. That, don't overreact to if like a guy, like, you're like, oh man, this guy's got a long way to go, because sometimes those guys turn out too, right? Like,
yeah,
Khalid Kareem was a perfect example of like, I remember he looked like he was swimming his first spring ball. He was early enrollee. And I was like, wow, he didn't redshirt, but he should have redshirted. Like, he would have been a 4-game guy for sure. I don't even know why they didn't redshirt him. It was stupid. Maybe because they promised him he wasn't going to redshirt or something, but like, he was not ready to play in that first year, but he made massive strides in that year and then really kind of took off.
Kyle Hamilton got his fast start by picking off a walk-on constantly in practice.
Well, no,
I think he's making a joke. He's making fun of Phil Jakovic there. Xavier Watts, right? Not a good, you know, Xavier Watts had a poor practice as a wide receiver. Now he's a defensive player of the year. Yeah. Got it. Touch with that. Robert Halke, thank you for the super chat. Got to get back to work. Keep up the good work. Thank you, Robert, for that. And I hope you have a great day at work. You know, let everyone know at your job about hit and hustle. Like and subscribe. Like and subscribe and hit and hustle. Hit the notification bell. Running backs, Jamie. Didn't hear a lot about the running backs. To me, that's nothing, right? And probably expected, right? There's no pads. They're not doing any run stuff. Can't do any of those things. You're not going to hear from it. I think everyone's very excited about the Jeremiah Love and Jadarian Price combination, especially, you know, when working with Riley Leonard, who we all suspect is going to be the starting quarterback. I do wonder about, like, the quarterbacks in that And this is something that I if anyone was to ask Marcus Freeman about this, it's like, how do you evaluate these guys? Because Rajon made a point, right? I haven't heard a negative word about any of the quarterbacks. And like, neither have I. Like, I just haven't heard anything. And it's like, how do you evaluate these players when you can't, there's no, the run element isn't there. And the ability to get hit isn't there. The ability to make plays in the pocket isn't really there. You can't really simulate that when your quarterback isn't live. How do you evaluate them? Because that's a big part of the game, right? Like, not everything takes place in a clean pocket with when you can only get touched, right? Like, I wonder how they evaluate, and not just like Riley Leonard vis-a-vis like Angeli and Minchie, but Angeli and Minchie vis-a-vis each other. Like, how do you evaluate those guys? I'm curious how he does that. How do you think you go about that stuff?
Well, I mean, the context part of it matters because, like, you know, when guys are in 7-on and they're, you know, just, everyone can look great in 7-on, right? They should look pretty good in 7-on, right? Yeah. Like, it's favors the offense. That's a situation where, you know, there's no rush. Yeah, there is like a little bit of a clock on you, but like, it's all on yourself. Like, it's not, you don't have any other kind of things that other factors that are determining anything, or just like even throwing the ball in like one-on-ones. If some guy's throwing to Jaden Thomas, it's different than he's throwing to a walk-on, right? Like, it's all that kind of stuff matters. But I think the way you see it is that, like, Notre Dame, they are going to bring the defense is going to bring quite a bit of pressure. And that's how you got to judge it, by like, okay, well, one, you have to evaluate these offensive linemen and how they pick up and how they're doing in protection and if they're picking up the right people and all that kind of stuff. But it's like, how do these guys deal with pressure? Because that's the main thing. And to me, that's always the number one thing when you're evaluating these quarterbacks. It's like if you're working behind the third team line and you're just getting destroyed all the time, it's like, yes, then it's hard to do. But if like you are there and you can still manage it while getting pressure on you, like, and you're just making the right decisions, right? You're making the right decision to throw this ball away, just to, you know, get the ball out where you have to, right? Throw this ball out with the right ball placement where it needs to go in tight coverage. Like, that's how you do it. With those guys. And it's tough when it's not against the number one defense, or the number two O-line isn't as good as the number two D-line, which typically that's usually what it is, but you got to kind of make the best of it. And there's enough pressure there from the defense that, yes, the threat of getting hit or the threat of not running is, can be something. But I think even like, that was the one thing with Buckner. It was like, buddy, run, use your legs. Cause if he ran, he's probably a completely different quarterback. He's probably like 10 times better than quarterback if he was like one of these guys who was like looking to run more, or even looking to escape more than he did. Yeah.
Beef Eater ND08 asked, did Faison drop a stanky leg on someone in the bowl game? I believe that was against Pitt. On a punt return. I might be wrong about that, but I believe it was Pitt. It wasn't the bowl game. So that's where that happened. Rajon says, how much of the quarterback evaluation comes in the film room? So do you think it matters? Do they put them on the whiteboard? Like, maybe these, like they do with these pro prospects, they put them on a whiteboard and do they ask them questions, right? Do they make them break down where to go with the ball?
Sure. That's definitely something like
that. It probably comes with it. But I think you got to do it though.
It comes with it, but then they got to apply it to the field, right? So it's like, that's the one thing too, is like where CJ Carr can look great and then people can be like, man, his arm is way better than I thought. And he looked great with this, but it's like, maybe he is ahead. I'm going to guess he's probably ahead of a lot of other freshmen when it comes to stuff, but he's still a freshman. Mm-hmm. So, Minchie should be telling him stuff, Like, he should be asking Minshew questions. And if that's not the case, that's not good for Minshew. You know, like, and if, and like, Angeli and, you know, and Leonard should be telling Carr stuff. And really, if you don't have those answers, that's going to hurt you. But then, you know, there's some guys who maybe aren't as good in that kind of environment, but they're great at improvising on the field. And so you got to be able to show that on the field too, but it all comes back to practice. It all comes back to practice. And that's where they're going to, you know, that's where most of it's going to come out. Cause they could, you can test you as much as you want in the film room. But if you can ace it there, if you can't make the throw, you can't make the decision while the heat's coming on you or against this type of coverage and know that this coverage is there when it's actually happening on the field rather than on the whiteboard or on film, that it doesn't matter.
Yeah. We're going to end with this important conversation taking place in the chat. Beef Eater, ND08, should a jelly donut or any donut without a hole in it still be called a donut? CFB Hertz went to Wikipedia. Per Wikipedia, the two most common types are the ring donut and the filled donut. So there's that. Vamos Irish says, yes, a jelly donut is a donut, much like how a guard and a tackle are both on the O-line. Different roles of the same ilk. Do you have
That is right there. Right there. Perfect. That's a great donut analogy. The O-linemen, you know, the guards and the centers, they got different responsibilities. It's perfect. That love that right there. You know, because, yeah, of course, a jelly donut, because it's like, what are you going to say? Like, well, a jelly donut's not really a jelly donut. Like, this isn't a hot dog is a sandwich type argument. This is a jelly donut is a donut. I don't care if it has a hole in it.
Yeah. Here's one. Donut holes have no holes.
Yeah.
Why? Why are they calling that?
I don't know. Shouldn't they be called Miss Terry?
Donut balls, right? Or something. Donut spheres. They don't have no holes. Don't call them that. Don't call them donut holes. They have no holes. That's where I'm at. Eclair is the footballer. We're talking about eclairs. So that's where we are right now at the end of this show. So we're going to leave it there. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If this is your first time, please subscribe to this. Please like this video. Please hit the notification bell so you know where it is. We are going live. We are going to be going live again on Thursday. Let's do a mailbag, Jamie. I think people have questions. We'll do a mailbag show on Thursday. So check in at irishsportsdaily.com for that. I know Vamos Irish is very excited to ask his St. Patrick's Day related question. We'll answer it. So we'll talk to you on Thursday. Have a good rest of the week, everyone. Keep hitting and hustling.